A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 29, Bhakti Yoga, verses 18 to 49. Verse 18. Sarvam brahma pakam tasya vidyaya mamani shaya paripasyana parame savato vokta sanshaya. By such transcendental knowledge of the all-pervading personality of Godhead, one is able to see the absolute truth everywhere. Freed thus from all doubts, one gives up fruitive activities. Mukam karati vacharam bhangalam kayate gire yakipandam hambande shikarandina chavinam om gana chivirandasya gyanam charasharakaya What do you remember from the last class? Hare Purush.
Buddha is asking for an easy explanation of the easiest method.
Easy explanation of the easiest method, Uddhava is asking. Yes, Chikaguru. Okay. Yes, many, many births again he's take just to come to Shada. Okay, yes. Okay. We have such a debt to Krishna for giving us himself as a super soul and the spiritual master. We cannot repay even in the lifetime of Brahma. Yes. Okay. He appears in two ways, as Acharya and as Guru. Yes. Devotees easily take shelter. And other ones take difficult paths. Hare Purush. Okay. Until you have developed the ability to see Krishna everywhere, you should offer respects to everyone by words, body and mind. Yes? Same. Okay. Yes? Okay. So, verse 18. If you have this knowledge, you can see the absolute truth everywhere and give up all fruitive activities. So, Jiva Goswami, again in Bhakti Sandarbha, he quotes a verse from 4:30:20, where it explains how you see the Lord everywhere. Always engaging in activities of devotional service, devotees feel ever increasingly fresh and new in all their activities. The all-knower, super soul within the heart, makes everything increasingly fresh. This is known as the Brahman position by the advocates of the absolute truth. In such a liberated stage, one is never bewildered, lament, or become unnecessarily jubilant. Okay? Always new and fresh. So then we go to verse 19. Verse 19. Indeed, I consider this process, using one's mind, words, and bodily functions for realizing me within all living beings, to be the best possible method of spiritual enlightenment. So there. Verse 20, my dear Uddhava, because I have personally established it, this process of devotional service unto me is transcendental and free from any material motivation. Certainly a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process. Purport of 20. Although great sages and authorities have established various methods of human progress, the Supreme Lord himself has introduced a system of bhakti yoga wherein one directly takes shelter of the Lord in loving service. One who serves the Lord without personal motivation can never be defeated in his progress and will certainly go back home, back to Godhead in the near future. So here is a comment by Vishnu Chakravarti, which Bhrijan will also tell you tomorrow, because he already told me. He asked me if I was giving it, and I wasn't sure, but here it is. So you'll refresh your memories tomorrow with this comment. In three verses, 9 to 11, the Lord described bhakti. And in eight verses, he described jnana, 12 to 19. In three verses, the Lord again describes the highest essence of bhakti. So 21 to 23. In following other processes, if one starts and performs the actions until completion without interruption with all the principal and secondary parts, one will attain the result. If one does not complete the process or interrupts it or does not follow all the parts, then there is no result. This is not the rule for bhakti, however. Remember, there was one verse we had in one chapter, chapter I don't remember, how that states this. Even if you don't do all the angas of bhakti, and does anybody remember that verse, then you still get success. That is, even if you run with eyes closed, you have your eyes closed and you run, you will still, if you're doing devotional service, you will still get the result. So let's see. If one starts and doesn't complete, or one doesn't perform all the parts, angas, or if you start and do one anga and don't complete, there's no destruction of results because of irregularity, because bhakti is beyond the gunas. Okay. Now the next verse is really nice. Verse 21. O Uddhava, greatest of saints, in a dangerous situation, and the ordinary person cries, becomes fearful, and laments, although such useless emotions do not change the situation, but activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they are externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion. So normally, so what he's saying is that if you cry, become fearful, and lament in relationship to Krishna, you will get some result, even if it's a useless activity. If you do it for Krishna, then you will get something. Whereas if you ordinarily you do that, you won't get anything. You'll just be in the mood of ignorance. Purport, even the most insignificant activity, when offered to the Supreme Lord without personal desire, can elevate one to the perfection of spiritual life. Actually, Lord Krishna always protects and maintains his devotees. But if a devotee cries to the Lord for protection or maintenance, desiring to continue his devotional service unimpeded, Lord Krishna accepts such apparently unnecessary appeals to be the highest religious process. Why is it unnecessary? Because Krishna is already protecting his devotee, so there's no need to cry for protection or maintenance. So it may seem like a useless thing to do, but if you do it, then you will get benefit. Even if you don't need to cry for protection, if you cry for protection, then it's good. And this is also a question, should we pray to the Lord for our health? And the answer is yes. If your body doesn't belong to you, it belongs to Krishna, and you're using your body for service to Krishna, then you can pray for your health, because it's not your body. It's Krishna's body. So it's okay. Because if you don't have your health, then you can't do your service. You're praying to your health so you can do your service, so the instrument can be used in the service of Krishna. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti says, if bhakti is practiced without duplicity, then without effort, it gives effects at every moment. I'll read that again. If bhakti is practiced without duplicity, then without effort, it gives effects at every moment. So if you want an easy path, give up duplicity. Whatever process of bhakti, such as hearing or chanting, is directed to me with no desire for material happiness now or later in swarga, or for liberation, is done without effort. The results appear on their own without effort. What is the use of effort? And he quotes a verse. Devotees find it useless to worry about eating and shelter. How can the Lord, who sustains the universe, ignore the devotees? So here it's being very specific, that you might worry about eating and shelter, but it's useless to worry. It is as useless as efforts executed out of fear and lamentation. Just as by attaining one's object naturally becomes visible. By attaining me, Krishna says, as the object of bhakti, bhakti appears on its own. Still, the sincere devotee always endeavors for bhakti. That endeavor shows his great attraction to bhakti. Effort is thus a great quality. So although we know that Krishna is already there, still we endeavor. We pray, we endeavor for Krishna's mercy. Although we already know we have the mercy of Krishna, it's on us, still we endeavor for it. Jiva Goswami means offering without a desire to attain any result. The words bring no result here mean they don't bring karmic results that will become an impediment to devotional service. So it's even though if they're externally useless, means externally useless in the verse means you don't get anything material for it. You don't get a material result. So if this is so for these activities, how much more must be for direct devotional service to Krishna, which is so rare? Here example is given, the word payade. The fear and other emotions that Kamsa and other demons felt for me were not in vain. So it's referring to these demons, the fear. If you have fear towards Krishna. This is so because these emotions brought liberation. So even fear, if you're afraid of Krishna, it brings, and the Prabhupada would often say that, see an article which was not a very favorable article. He said, no, how many times is the word Krishna in there, in that article? And he said, yes. So it's good, even if it's an unfavorable article. So now the next verse explains why we should do bhakti. The most wonderful thing, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, I believe, calls this the touchstone of all verses. The essence of the Lord's teachings. He who has this verse shining in his heart shines in the assembly of devotees. So that's the next verse. So listen very carefully. This process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following it, one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. So in the Jnana Yoga section, we heard so much about the temporary. This is unreal. This is temporary. But we can use all of these useless things, the temporary, all these useless temporary things, all these useless unreal things, to get Krishna, which is eternal, who is eternal. We can use the temporary, sacrifice the temporary, and get the eternal. So it's a wonderful verse. Even though the Mayavadis say it's useless, forget it, we say no. We will use these useless things to get eternal life. So that's what we're doing. That was from the first, the last verse. It said useless. These emotions are useless, but they're not useless if they are in relation to Krishna. Purport. As described in this chapter, one who desires personal prestige in the Lord's service cannot be considered intelligent and clever. Similarly, one who is anxious to become a sophisticated transcendental philosopher is not the most intelligent, nor is one who is expert in accumulating money. The Lord here states, the most intelligent and clever person is a devotee who offers his temporary illusory material body and possessions to him with love and without personal motivation. Devotee thus obtains the eternal absolute truth. In other words, real intelligence is to actually surrender to Lord Krishna without personal desire or duplicity. That is the Lord's opinion. So why is bhakti the best method? Because we can use our temporary bodies to get eternal Krishna. We get Krishna. And if we exchange, we just exchange. Okay, you take this body and I give it for your service. And in exchange, we get Krishna. So it's wonderful. Very intelligent and very clever thing to do. And Vishnu Chakravarti will say, the devotee is the most intelligent of those with intelligence, but he's not intelligent in dissecting difficult scriptures, like the Jnanis, of course. See, that's so usually when people think of intelligence, think, oh, the Jnani is very intelligent. But the devotee doesn't have this type of intelligence to just dissect the scriptures. He is clever among those who are clever, but he's not clever in earning a gold coin in exchange for a penny. So people think in the material world, somebody is clever if he can, you know, for one cent get a gold coin. This is cleverness. But devotee has a different kind. What is that cleverness? In Bhartabhumi, the devotee attains me without death, with eternal form, by using a mortal temporary body. He controls me by bhakti alone. Using the disgusting material body, he attains my pure spiritual sarup. He attains me, satyam, existing at all times. By the jiva who is called non-existent, unretainer, because he lacks a... Okay. Anyway, here we'll just read the explanation. He who can receive 1,000 coins by giving 1 coin is said to be most intelligent and skillful in this world. One who obtains diamonds or a gold coin in exchange for a small coin is called intelligent and skillful. A person who can take a gold coin from a sober, intelligent person is called intelligent and skillful. But one cannot say who is intelligent enough to obtain a Chintamani or a Kamadhenu. The inhabitants of Bharatvarsh, here's the most wonderful sentence, who are mortal and born in low families, that's us, offer to me their bodies not worth a penny, which are deformed and afflicted with old age and disease, that's me, but they attain me, the ocean of sweetness. Accepting their offerings, I, who am supposed to be the cleverest, out of joy give myself with my priceless ornaments, bracelets, and crown to the devotees. Such inhabitants of Bharat Bhumi are the most intelligent and most skillful. So we give our disgusting material bodies with old age and disease to Krishna, and Krishna gives himself to us. Isn't that a good exchange? We should go for it. So that's why bhakti is the best. We give these. What do we have to give to Krishna? I mean, what do we have actually to give him? He has everything. He has all opulence. And he forgets his intelligence and gives himself to us because he's so happy that we are giving something to him. So it doesn't seem so intelligent on his part. He's not getting the good side of the deal. But for us, it's very intelligent and very clever thing to do. Just to trade in this, they have in America, what is it, cash for clunkers. You give an old useless car and they give you money, like $5,000 for it, $4,000 to $5,000. Used to have, it's not anymore. And then you get a new car, of course, then you have to pay. You get that $5,000 off the new car and you have to pay the rest. So we're giving our clunkers our for Krishna. We're getting something really much better in return. So this is this verse here. That's the meaning of this wonderful verse. Intelligence of the intelligent. The devotee is the most intelligent and most clever. Because look what he's doing. Giving one's body to the Lord means to engage the ear and other organs in hearing, chanting, remembering, and service. If the tongue is engaged in chanting, if the ears are engaged in hearing, if the hands are engaged in service, then one is giving one's body to the Lord. But the Lord is attained even by offering only one part of the body. What intelligent person will not do this? You know, we just have to give our ear or our tongue or, you know, just anything, and he'll give himself. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't bhakti something? So this is a touchstone among verses that the devotee gives the temporary in exchange for the eternal. And let's see what Satyaraj has to say. Ironically, in bhakti yoga, one uses the senses, which are material, in the service of the master of the senses, who is entirely spiritual. In fact, bhakti yoga is the art of taking all matter and transforming it into spirit. In this sense, it is the ultimate alchemical process, easy to achieve and joyfully performed. It must be learned at the feet of an adept. However, this is the secret. Therefore, Krishna began this chapter by stressing the importance of holy association. Only by associating with true devotees, from the spiritual master to other advanced practitioners who serve the Lord with a sincere heart, can one learn the secrets of bhakti, the secret of transforming common material elements into high-potency spiritual substance capable of bringing one into the realm of the divine. A practical example of the transformation process is found in prasadam, Haribo, as relished in the homes of all devotees, at Krishna temples throughout the world, and even at Vaishnava restaurants. When one chants the appropriate mantras over the food with love and devotion, Krishna himself tastes these delectable preparations, thus invigorating them with spiritual potency. Once offered in this way, the food purifies all who prepare it, serve it out, and, of course, eat it. The prasadam factor has been documented in many religious texts of the Eastern Hemisphere and is a phenomenon well known by all Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. So you have to use this fancy language to convince people in the West about prasadam factor. 23. Thus, I have related to you, that's the end of the Uddhava Gita. This touchstone among verses is the end of the Uddhava Gita, verse 22. Thus, I have related to you, in both in brief and in detail, a complete survey of the science of the Absolute Truth. Even for the demigods, this science is very difficult to comprehend. No wonder we don't understand it. Okay, purport. The word Devanam indicates those living beings in the mode of goodness, like demigod saints and pious philosophers, who nevertheless cannot understand the Absolute Truth because they lack full surrender to the personality of Godhead. 24. I have repeatedly spoken this knowledge to you with clear reasoning. Anyone who properly understands it will become free from all doubts and attain liberation. Okay, so here comes all the benedictions. So listen carefully. Verse 25. Anyone who fixes his attention on these clear answers to your questions will attain to the eternal confidential goal of the Vedas, the supreme absolute truth. One who liberally disseminates this knowledge among my devotees is the bestower of the absolute truth, and to him I give my very own self. We are waiting for this. When will this day come? Okay, so what verses in Bhagavad Gita are very similar to this verse? 69. My devotee, whoever teaches Bhagavad Gita to devotees, he gets two things. Does anybody remember? What are those two things? Yes. Pure devotional service and? He comes to me. Very good. Yes. He comes to me, he gets pure devotional service. Very good. No one is more dear to me than he in this world, nor shall anyone ever be as dear. 26. Okay. Why is this so? Why is the devotee so dear? Because the entire world depends, this is Satyaraj, on devotees themselves having this knowledge of transcendence. Devotees then, in turn, are meant to instruct all others. But if devotees don't know the truth of spiritual life, how will they instruct people in general? Therefore, enlightening the devotees is perhaps the greatest service one can offer to Lord Krishna. Of course, before explaining these truths to devotees, one must oneself know what these truths are. Okay. Then, Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has something on 26. Purport. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are well aware of the science of devotional service. When they mercifully distribute that knowledge to others and thus bring them to the service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord reciprocates such magnanimity by giving his very self to such devotees. On the other hand, those engrossed in their plans for some material enjoyment cannot possibly achieve such mercy of the Lord. 27. He who loudly recites the supreme knowledge, which is the most lucid and purifying, becomes purified day by day, for he reveals me to others with the lamp of transcendental knowledge. So, Satyaraj comments, this is the principle of Sankirtan. But the word is sufficiently nuanced to include numerous ways of conveying the Lord's glories. It's the principle of sharing one's spiritual assets. And then it can be in so many ways. Verse 28. Anyone who regularly listens to this knowledge with faith and attention, all the while engaging in my pure devotional service, will never become bound by the reactions of material work. My dear friend Uddhava, have you now completely understood this transcendental knowledge? Are the confusion and lamentation that arose in your mind now dispelled? Purport. Sri Uddhava had been bewildered by considering manifestations of Lord Krishna's own potency to be separate from him. Uddhava's lamentation arose because he thought himself separated from Lord Krishna. Actually, Uddhava is an eternal liberated soul, but the Lord placed him in bewilderment and lamentation so this supreme knowledge of Uddhava Gita could be spoken. Lord Krishna's question here indicates, if Uddhava had not perfectly understood this knowledge, Lord Krishna would have explained the same thing again. According to Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakur, since Uddhava is intimate friend of Lord Krishna, the Lord's question here was in a friendly, playful spirit. The Lord was well aware of Uddhava's complete enlightenment in Krishna consciousness. So, again, this is similar to Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna asks Arjuna, have you heard this, and are your doubts dispelled? And Arjuna said, yes, now my doubts are dispelled, and I have regained my memory I'm prepared to act according to your instructions. Verse 30, you should not share this instruction with anyone who is hypocritical, atheistic, or dishonest, or with anyone who will not listen faithfully, who is not a devotee, who is simply not humble. So, similar verse in Bhagavad Gita. Don't explain it to those who are not austere, devoted, or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. So the idea is this. Why not tell these people? Because Sadhiraj says that they can use the knowledge for lesser purposes. They can misuse the knowledge to make money, to appear learned, or to exploit others. So Krishna advises against sharing this knowledge with them. However, if they express interest and show signs of sincerity, you can share certain fundamental precepts with them, hoping that these teachings will purify them of their lesser qualities and allow them to move forward on the spiritual path. The Prabhupada says, yes, we hold open Gita class for people, and anyone can come and hear the class. 31. This knowledge should be taught to one who is free from these bad qualities, who is dedicated to the welfare of the brahmanas, who is kindly disposed, saintly, and pure. And if common workers and women are found to have devotion for the Supreme Lord, they are also to be accepted as qualified learners. So this is... This philosophy is based not on the body, but the soul, which is equal in all beings. Still, speaking to society at hand at this time, Krishna wants to assure Uddhava and future readers of Uddhava Gita, anyone can hear these teachings and benefit from their content, as long as one is sincere at heart and willing to develop devotion for God. 33. Through analytical knowledge, ritualistic work, mystic yoga, mundane business, and political rule, people seek to advance in religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. But because you are my devotee, whatever men can accomplish in these multifarious ways, you will very easily find within me. Purport.
32.
Oh, 32. I didn't say that. Sorry. When an inquisitive person comes to understand this knowledge, he has nothing further to know. After all, one who has drunk the most palatable nectar cannot remain thirsty. So this is, you. If you know this, you know everything. Okay. And then verse 33, we already read. Purport, Lord Krishna is the basis of all that exists, and one who takes exclusive shelter of the Lord never suffers any loss whatsoever for his intelligent decision to surrender to Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti says, if some devotees become attracted to the results of jnana or karma, then he should practice those methods. The Lord answers, addressing Uddhava, but meaning people in general, whatever of the four goals men seek by jnana, karma, yoga, or other means, I give all of those results to my devotees. What is the need for my devotee to practice these other methods? So, no need. And Jiva Goswami says, pure devotees of Lord Krishna who are like Uddhava find that Lord Krishna is both the goal and the means to attain the goal. Verse 34, a person who gives up all fruitive activities and offers himself entirely unto me. So this verse is Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan. Offering yourself to Krishna is Sambandha. Eagerly desiring to render service unto me is Abhideya. And achieves liberation from birth and death and is promoted to the status of sharing my own opulences. And that's Prayojan. Now, sharing my own opulences is their translation, but Prabhupada has a very sweet other translation, which we will hear shortly. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments right here. Uddhava might have said, I've heard your opinion on this matter, but what is the opinion of your devotees? The Lord would reply, my dear Uddhava, the opinion of pious persons has been described in the 18th chapter. What was the title of the 18th chapter? Anybody have their book? Varnashrama, continued. Pious people. The opinion of sinful men has been given in the 22nd chapter. And what was that? That was Burijan's class. Oh, about all the counting of Sankhya. Counting, different ways of counting the elements. I don't remember the name of it. And my devotees are truthful, saintly, and undisturbed by material duality. A surrendered soul is one who, by the mercy of my devotee, has given up all varieties of religiosity to engage in my unalloyed service. Such a surrendered devotee has taken shelter at the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master who is none different from me. The spiritual master initiates his disciple into chanting of Krishna mantras, and disciple offers everything in his possession, including his body, mind, and power of speech for the service of the Lord. When a devotee sincerely surrenders unto me, even once, I personally take charge of him. My activities and activities of my devotees are transcendental and factual, having nothing to do with Maya, the illusory energy. As a result of his engagement in my service, the devotee comes to associate with me as one of my loving associates. So that's what Vishwanath says. Instead of equal opulences, he says he comes to associate with me as one of my loving associates. And he will go back to Godhead. So then, in another, I have more comments by Vishwanath. I have understood all philosophies and processes, but please say, what is the philosophy for your devotees? Oh dear Uddhava, in the 24th chapter, I explain Sat Karyavad. Effects exist in the cause. Effects are real. This world is real. In the 28th chapter, I explain Asat Karyavad. It's illusory. Remember that whole last chapter, and it's not this, not this, not this. It's unreal. My devotees do not quarrel, but proclaim truth and do not remain amidst these two philosophies. When a person by chance gets mercy of my devotee, gives up all daily, periodic, and motivated duties, and offers all identity of I and mine by words and mind to the Guru, who is my Swarup, who gives my mantra, from that moment, that mortal person desires to do different work for me, bhakti yoga, different from yoga and jnana, and that is surrender. Okay, and the effects of bhakti are not illusory, but real. It is not the effect of avidya, beyond the gunas. The devotee is made deathless, and he becomes qualified for being my servant in my company. So it's a different, he has a different translation, the status of sharing my own opulences. He says, an associate in prema, and he gets my company, becomes qualified for being my servant. And this verse is quoted, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 22, verse 102. Well, first, yes, when it, first, and then 103. First it says in CC, when a devotee thus fully surrenders unto Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna accepts him as one of his confidential associates. Then Prabhupada translates this verse, so listen to this translation, which Srila Prabhupada gives of this verse. The living entity who is subjected to birth and death attains immortality. When he gives up all material activities, dedicates his life to the execution of my order, and acts according to my directions. In this way, he becomes fit to enjoy the spiritual bliss derived from exchanging loving mellows with me. So instead of saying opulence, he says, becomes fit to enjoy the spiritual bliss derived from exchanging loving mellows with me. It's a much more Prayojan Prema translation. And then all opulences kind of thinks, well, I thought devotees reject that liberation. Actually, he becomes a confidential servant and he exchanges love with Krishna. That's what happens. And Prabhupada said, this is a quotation from 11:29:34. Krishna was advising his most confidential servant Uddhava about sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan. So in Prabhupada's translation, you can see more about sambandha. Gives up material activities, dedicates his life to execution of my orders, sambandha, acts according to my direction, that's abhideya. And prayojan is when you have love for Krishna. So Prabhupada saw it as sambandha, abhideya, prayojan. So this concerns one relationship with the Lord and activities of that relationship, as well as the perfection of life. In Antyalila, the same verse is quoted, Antya 4:194. And Prabhupada says another thing. At the time of initiation, a devotee gives up all his material conceptions. Therefore, being in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is situated on the transcendental platform. So that's sambandha. Thus, having attained knowledge and the spiritual platform, sambandha, he always engages in service of the spiritual body of Krishna, abhideya. One is free from material connections in this way. His body immediately becomes spiritual, and Krishna accepts his service. However, Krishna does not accept anything from a person with a material conception of life. This is Madhya Antya 4.194. When a devotee no longer has any desire for material sense gratification in his spiritual identity, he engages in service of the Lord, for his dormant spiritual consciousness awakens. This awakening, Antya Lila 4.194. This awakening of spiritual consciousness makes his body spiritual, thus he becomes fit to render service to the Lord. Karmis may consider the body of a devotee material, but factually it is not, for a devotee has no conception of material enjoyment. If one thinks the body of a pure devotee is material, he is an offender, and that is Vaishnava Aparad. We can consult Brihadbhagavatamrita for that. Narada Bhakti Sutra says you should actually develop the six symptoms of surrender. And they quote this verse. And also, I don't know where this is from. Science of Self-Realization. This is an example of complete surrender to the Lord. I think this might be from Nectar of Devotion. When the mortal beings desire to relinquish all fruitive activities and their results, and fully surrender unto me, I reciprocate by giving them the nectar of immortality, elevating them to become my eternal associates. And isn't that a beautiful translation of this verse? You get the nectar of immortality and become associate of Krishna. So I think this is Science of Self-Realization. The conclusion is, on the platform of prema, Krishna becomes the life, the soul, and greatest treasure of the devotee. In this stage, the sublime exchanges of love between devotee and the Lord, due to their natural attraction for each other, flowers into full bloom. Quoting a verse from Bhagavatam 7.5.14, just as pieces of iron rush of their own volition to the magnet, similarly by the independent will of the Supreme Lord, my heart and mind have shaken off their enthrallment to material life and are forcibly being drawn to the magnet of his lotus feet. Shishikshastakam, is it? Written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, I got SS8 here. So it's the last verse of Shikshastaka. Also, this is Ashishava Paratam Pidastumam. You may embrace me or trample me, but I will always remain. You will always remain my worshipful Lord, birth after birth, unconditionally. 35. Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing these words spoken by Lord Krishna, having thus been shown the entire path of yoga, Uddhava folded his hands to offer obeisances, but his throat choked up with love, and his eyes overflowed with tears, so he could say nothing. Steadying his mind, which had been overwhelmed with love, Uddhava felt extremely grateful to Lord Krishna, the greatest hero of the Yadu dynasty. My dear King Parikshit, Uddhava bowed down to touch the Lord's lotus feet with his head, and then spoke with folded hands. Report. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the fear of separation from Lord Krishna was continually entering the mind of Sri Uddhava, and thus he tried to maintain his enthusiasm by remembering the Lord's great kindness upon him. He steadied his mind with feelings of gratitude towards the Lord. 37. Sri Uddhava said, O unborn primeval Lord, although I had fallen into the greatest darkness of illusion, my ignorance has now been dispelled by your merciful association. Indeed, how can cold, darkness, and fear exert their power over one who has approached the brilliant sun? Remember, there is an analogy in chapter 26 about cold, darkness, and fear. What was that in relationship to? Just like fire can, when you get close to fire, then the cold, the darkness, and the fear is extinguished. It's in chapter 26. Similarly, one who engages in the service of the devotee is what I think it is. So dullness, fear, and ignorance are destroyed for one engaged in serving devotees of the Lord. Wonderful verse. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur Oh, first the purport. Although Sri Uddhava feared separation from Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, he now understands that in a fundamental sense, the Lord is everything. After hearing it over and over through all the chapters of Uddhava Gita, that Krishna is everywhere and within everything, he's understood. Krishna consciousness can never be threatened or diminished for one who has taken full shelter of lotus feet of the Lord. So let's see what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says. Uddhava said, he paraphrases, I have surrendered my body, soul, mind, intelligence, and senses unto you, and in return you have enlightened me with the knowledge that removes all darkness of ignorance. My dear Lord, I am fully satisfied at every moment by the realization of your unfathomable glories. Now you may do whatever you wish to your surrendered servant. You may keep me here or send me wherever you desire. I am ever grateful to you, and I simply wish to remain your eternal servant. I have no personal desire to go anywhere, even a holy place of pilgrimage, leaving aside your lotus feet. I am happy to reside anywhere as long as I am fully absorbed in your devotional service. Whatever you wish me to do, I will carry out your order. This is the purport of this verse. But I'm ready. Just like Arjuna said, okay, I'm ready to act according to your instructions. So this is the same verse, verse 37, that Uddhava is saying. Verse 38. In return for my insignificant surrender, you have mercifully bestowed upon me, your servant, the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. Therefore, what devotee of yours who has any gratitude could ever give up your lotus feet and take shelter of another master? So, again, I have the comment by Vishnath, but in other words. I have offered my body along with senses, intelligence, and mind to you, and you have offered to me the lamp of Vijnana, which gives realization of the self. I have been made perfect by you through experiencing the sweetness of you and your associates, who exist in all time and space. I am now here. Do what you want with my body. Send me where you desire, leave me here, because what grateful servant giving up your lotus feet would go to some other shelter, even if it is yours? If one can attain your direct presence there, he should go. There is no loss in doing so. Rather, I follow your order. 39. We have a bit of a confusing verse. The firmly binding rope of my affection for the families of the Dasharas, Rishnis, Andakas, and Sattvatas, a rope you originally cast over me by your illusory energy for the purpose of developing your creation, is now cut off by the weapon of transcendental knowledge of the self. So, remember that verse, cut off the false ego with knowledge. Purport, although the members of the families mentioned in this verse are eternal associates of Lord Krishna and thus proper objects of affection, Sri Uddhava had regarded them as his personal relatives rather than simply as pure devotees of the Lord. So that's an easy mistake. If you have your wife, your children, your brothers, your friends, you see them as your relatives. That's the illusory energy of this world. Of course, but in the spiritual world, they're eternally his relatives. So let's see. There has to be more comment. Influenced by the Lord's illusory potency, Uddhava had desired the prosperity and victory of these dynasties. But now, by hearing Lord Krishna's instructions, he has again fixed his mind exclusively upon Lord Krishna. Thus he regards his so-called family members without any mundane conception as eternal servants of the Lord. So he's seeing them in relationship to Krishna rather than himself. So an interesting comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Uddhava might wonder, how can I sever my affection for the Yadavas and go elsewhere? He would answer that as follows. I am tied to the Yadavas with the rope of affection. My dear Lord, you expanded your family. The Yadavas have thus increased the population by means of your own potency. Your family is still expanding through the agency of your sons and grandsons. Thus my social prestige has also spread in all directions. You should now cut off the rope of my family affection and prestige with the weapon of transcendental knowledge. Let me instead be tied by the rope of affection to those who relish hearing and chanting your transcendental names, as well as descriptions of your transcendental forms, qualities, and pastimes. Let that affection remain as my ornament. I wish to remain in your association and that of the other of us forever. This is my prayer. So he would like to be with devotees who are always chanting the holy names. even rather than be with the Yadavas. So, comment by Satyaraj. This is further proof that Uddhava poses as a conditioned soul. So this is how he takes another perspective. The families he cites are actually transcendental associates of the Lord, thus attachment to them would be desirable in spiritual life. Nonetheless, in verse 39, he shows how one would normally view familial attachment when it acts as an obstacle on the spiritual path. So he's taking the part of conditioned soul, according to Satyaraj. Verse 40, obeisances unto you, O greatest of yogis. Remember what Arjuna said, or was it Arjuna? It was who spoke the end of Bhagavad Gita? Sanjay was speaking the end. He said, glories to Krishna, who's Yogeshwara. Where there is Krishna, who is Yogeshwara, and where is Arjuna, there will certainly be victory. So here again, we have Yogeshwara, the greatest of yogis. Another similar, Mahayogi. Please instruct me, who I am surrendered unto you, how I may have undeviating attachment to your lotus feet. So a comment by Jiva Goswami. Here Uddhava says, although you have already helped me in many ways, still I make this request. He says, oh Lord, please instruct me. I mean, we certainly had enough instructions already, but he still wants one more. The devotees, they always want more. They're greedy for instructions. The word anapayani here means even after liberation. So even after liberation, I still need help. Not like the Mayavadis. 41 to 44. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, take my order. Go to my ashram called Bhadarika. So he's asking, okay, now you can use my body. So what shall I do now? It means, what service can I do? Purify yourself by both touching and also bathing in the holy waters there, which have emanated from my lotus feet. Rid yourself of all sinful reactions with the sight of the sacred Alakananda River. Dress yourself in bark and eat whatever is naturally available in the forest. Thus, you should remain content and free from desire, tolerant of all dualities, good-natured, self-controlled, peaceful, and endowed with transcendental knowledge and realization. With fixed attention, meditate constantly upon these instructions I have imparted to you and assimilate their essence. Fix your words and thoughts upon me and always endeavor to increase your realization of my transcendental qualities. In this way you will cross beyond the destinations of the three modes of nature and finally come back to me. So then Vishwanath comments, O Uddhava, among all my associate Yadavas, you are my very form since you are equal to me. I have said, and he quotes, Uddhava is not less than me, that's 3431 he quotes. Uddhava is not less than me because he's master of Maya and not at all lacking in any spiritual quality. He should remain on this earth, giving knowledge of me to the world. As we heard, Krishna had gone to so many places, to Suttala, even Vaikuntha, and he's gone to, but he hasn't gone to Bhadarikashram. He's gone to the heavenly planets. So he wanted Uddhava to go in his place and represent him. Satyaraj also comments. Basically, in these final verses, the Lord summarizes all he has taught Uddhava from the beginning of their discussion. The devotee should focus his mind on the Lord and glorify him in every way, associate with devotees at a holy place, live simply. Krishna should be his sole object of contemplation, and he should meditate on the teachings of spiritual reality. Interestingly, Krishna begins these final verses by telling Uddhava to share this message at Bhadarikashram. This is significant. Krishna does not want Uddhava to merely relish these supreme teachings on his own, for this would neglect the element of compassion. Indeed, the principle of sankirtan, going out and giving Krishna to others, whether by singing or explaining them, is the recommended process of self-realization for this age. And Uddhava is called on to do just that, to spread the word of Krishna consciousness. 45. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus addressed by Lord Krishna, whose intelligence destroys all the suffering of material life, Sri Uddhava circumambulated the Lord and then fell down, placing his head upon the Lord's feet. Although Uddhava was free from the influence of all material dualities, his heart was breaking, and at this time of departure he drenched the Lord's lotus feet with his tears. 46. Greatly fearing separation from him for whom he felt such indestructible affection, Uddhava was distraught, and he could not give up the Lord's company. Finally, feeling great pain, he bowed down to the Lord again and again, placed the slippers of his master upon his head, and departed. Purport. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 3.4.5, while Uddhava was en route to Bhadarikasram, he heard about the Lord's journey to Prabhas. Turning back and following Lord Krishna from behind, he saw the Lord alone just after withdrawal of the other dynasty. After being again mercifully instructed by the personality of Godhead, along with Maitreya, who had just arrived, Uddhava felt his knowledge of the truth reawaken, and then by the order of the Lord, he went on his way. So, there is a purport by Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita that is very reminiscent of this, what Uddhava is called on to do. Madhya Lila 13, verse 156, purport. Just as Krishna does not take a step away from Vrindavan, Krishna's devotee also does not like to leave Vrindavan. However, when he has to tend to Krishna's business, he leaves Vrindavan. After finishing his mission, a pure devotee returns home, back to Vrindavan, back to Godhead. Krishna assured Radharani that after killing the demons outside Vrindavan, he would return. I'm coming back very soon, he promised, as soon as I've killed the few remaining demons. So Krishna left, although he never leaves Vrindavan, he went to kill the demons. And the devotee never leaves Vrindavan, but Prabhupada went, he left Vrindavan to go to America to preach. And when he was in New York, then he was telling how he was, even though he's in New York, actually I'm remembering my Vrindavan. He was telling one lady there at his class, one of the early classes. So then Satyaraj describes separation. In fact, the only way to attain union, sambhoga, with Krishna is through this harsh feeling of the Lord's absence, through what he calls the dark night of the soul, leading to the light of perfect Krishna consciousness. When mundane lovers are separated from their beloved, the separation is painful because they're not getting what they want. Their sensual interest is not being fulfilled. Interestingly, mundane union is in its way as painful as separation, for while it gratifies one's immediate sensual interest, it does not touch the soul. And so he's saying spiritual separation and union, it's both pleasure, but mundane separation and union, it's both misery, either way you look at it. So even in union, one tends to feel something lacking. In this sense, union and separation, at least in the material world, have much in common, because they're both miserable. Still, spiritually speaking, mundane separation is often more valuable than union, for if it endures, it easily can lead to detachment. As Krishna teaches Uddhava in various parts of the Uddhava Gita, out of sight, out of mind is the saying they have in the West. So if your lover is out of sight, he's out of mind, generally, especially in the West, because you can always find another one, no problem. Spiritual union and separation are similar to each other too. Both are joyful, since they are devoid of selfish concern. Love for Krishna is based on the desire to please Krishna's senses. Thus, when united with him, one is happy, if this is what Krishna wants. Yet a pure devotee would gladly experience separation from him as well, if, in a sense, it hurts, as long as it is in pursuance of Krishna's desire. In the end, a devotee is not interested in union or separation. He's interested in Krishna's happiness and pleasing the Lord. This is selflessness and this is love. So verse 47, thereupon, placing the Lord deeply within his heart, the great devotee Uddhava went to Bhadarikasram. By engaging there in austerities, he attained to the Lord's personal abode, which had been described to him by the only friend of the universe, Lord Krishna himself. Purport. Sri Uddhava returned to Dwaraka in the spiritual sky, according to Sri Vishnu Chakravati Thakur. And Satyaraj comments, moving beyond the dark night of the soul. Very poetic. Fueled by the realization that Krishna is always with him in his heart, he attained perfect union and the pinnacle of divine consciousness. 48. Thus Lord Krishna, whose lotus feet are served by all great yoga masters, spoke to his devotee this nectarian knowledge, which comprises the entire ocean of spiritual bliss. Anyone within this universe who receives this narration with great faith is assured of liberation. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, anyone who hears with genuine faith a little of this nectar of knowledge spoken by the Lord, completely supported by bhakti yoga and ocean of bliss, becomes liberated. And even more, by his association, the whole universe becomes liberated. You get a little bit of it, you get liberation, and then the whole universe gets liberated too. 49. I offer my respectful obeisances to that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maybe we should sing this verse. Is it a... Paya, paya, payama, pahantum. No. Gyana, vigyana, saram. Nigama, kridu, pachari, bringalad, vedasaram. Amritam, udatitas, chapaya, brityavagan. Purusham, ishabam, adyam, krishnasangam, natasme. I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original and greatest of all beings, Lord Shri Krishna. He is the author of the Vedas. And just to destroy his devotees' fear of material existence, like a bee, he has collected this nectarian essence of all knowledge and self-realization. Thus he has awarded to his many devotees this nectar from the ocean of bliss, and by his mercy, they have drunk it. Why did Krishna collect this essence? To destroy the fear of his devotees. Purport. Just as a bee extracts nectar from a flower without harming the flower, Lord Shri Krishna extracts the essence of all Vedic knowledge without disturbing the elaborate system of Vedic advancement. In other words, Lord Shri Krishna establishes himself as the goal of Vedic knowledge without destroying preliminary inferior processes that may be applicable to grossly materialistic men. Shukadeva Goswami thus concludes by offering his obeisances to the spiritual master of the entire universe, Lord Shri Krishna. Let's hear what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says. Shri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead without beginning and without end. As a supreme instructor, he removes the living entity's fear of repeated birth and death. He mercifully distributes love of himself, which is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, to all conditioned souls who are otherwise averse to his service. He is a compiler of Vedic literature, and he distributed its essence to these swan-like Vaishnavas. It is the foremost duty of all living entities to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, giving up all varieties of religiosity. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, a very interesting comment. As a conclusion, the author offers respects to the Guru of the universe. He has extracted the essences from the Vedas, but have not other sages and philosophers also extracted the essence from the Vedas? That is true, but they do not completely understand the purport of the Vedas, which is hard to comprehend. Therefore, one cannot believe their explanations. But the Lord is not like that. He is the creator of the Vedas. He who created the scriptures must know the difficult meaning. He is like a bee taking the honey from the garden of flowers made of the Vedas. He makes his servants drink it, but he has cheated the demons and non-devotees. Isn't that interesting? So that's why there's two meanings to each verse. Like, it can be some meaning for the non-devotees and another meaning for the devotees. An example is given. It is nectar, the essence taken from the ocean, in the form of Mohini. The Lord let the devatas, his servants, drink the nectar and cheated the demons. I offer my respects to that Lord. So we could see some verses were a bit like jnana, but actually that is to cheat them so they don't get the nectar. So how does Satyaraj? She has a really nice, very nice commentary. Thus ends the Uddhava Gita, which elaborates on the five items only briefly explored in its cousin text, the Bhagavad Gita. What are those five items? Time, karma, yes? Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Karma. Okay, good. Uddhava Gita also details the interaction of these five items and how they can affect the spiritual journey. Lord Krishna had explained these things to Arjuna with self-conscious brevity. means he was trying to save time. He did it very concisely. Because they were preparing for an oncoming battle of extreme proportions. Indeed, tradition reveals the Lord had just under an hour to express his transcendental truth to the legendary archer, whereas Uddhava encountered Krishna while the latter was comfortably seated under a beautiful banyan tree in a relaxed mood. And so he had more time. This allowed for a more extensive discussion, with Uddhava asking numerous questions and the Lord taking his time to reveal confidential knowledge. That being said, there was also a sense of urgency in the Lord's recitation of Uddhava Gita, for he was preparing to leave the planet at a predetermined time. Accordingly, while the setting of this text is more accommodating than that of Bhagavad Gita, it is still not ideal, so Krishna was unable to delve into the details and specifics necessary for a complete understanding of these subjects. Therefore, say the great teachers and stalwarts of the Vaishnava tradition, commentators are necessary to enter into the inner meaning of the text, as is a bona fide spiritual master. So very nice concluding comments by Satyaraj. And I would also like to conclude the Uddhava Gita with something that happened after Uddhava Gita was spoken. One more story about Uddhava, and this is from Krishna Katamrita, Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is adapted from Vaishnava Kanda of Skanda Purana, chapters 1 and 3. After Krishna's disappearance from this world, so this is a little bit after Krishna disappeared, but it's about Uddhava, so I wanted to read this now. After Krishna's disappearance, his queens came to Braj, where Vrajanab, Krishna's great-grandson, was protecting them. One day, while being tormented by the pain of separation from Krishna, they noticed their co-wife Kalindi was happy. Without succumbing to jealousy, they inquired from her, "You are a wife of Krishna, just like the rest of us. We, however, are distressed by the misery of separation while you are not. Please explain this." Kalindi smiled and told them, "Sri Radhika is the very self of self-satisfied Krishna. Is on the strength of being situated in her service, the pain of separation does not affect us. All of us are Krishna's all of Krishna's consorts are her partial expansions. His eternal pleasures go on by virtue of her being present." So then she goes into a description, and she says, "In Vrindavan I was Jamuna, and eager to continue serving two of them, I've assumed a different form and have joined you, thus you see me here. Actually, you are never separated from Krishna. Unaware of this, you are experiencing distress. Previously, the gopis also felt the pain of separation when Akura came here. I experienced how Uddhava spoke to the gopis and remedied that pain. If you good women were to meet the same Uddhava, then you could surely achieve eternal enjoyment with your beloved." So she's saying, okay, we should hear from Uddhava. So then they say, "We want to be your maidservants, so please help us find Uddhava." So she said, "Yes, he's gone to the Himalayas, but he's also here in Braj, residing at a place near Govardhan Hill in an unseen way in the form of plants and creepers, eager to obtain dust touched by the gopis." So here we have the Kusum Sarovar. Everybody knows Kusum Sarovar. And here's Uddhava Kund. So what happened? So they went to the lake Kusum Sarovar and began a great festival of Krishna Sankirtan. The kirtan was tumultuous. Feeling great separation from Krishna, everyone emotionally sang poems and devotional songs and played on veenas, flutes, and mridangas. The kirtan was so splendid, the pastimes of Krishna seemed to become manifest. Suddenly, as everyone watched, Uddhava came out of a grove of bushes and creepers. He wore a flower garland, had a dark blue complexion, and wore a yellow garment. Wearing a necklace of gunja berries, he was constantly singing about the darling of the cowherd girls. With his arrival, the Sankirtan festival reached a peak of splendor. He glowed like a jewel embedded in a crystal tower caught in the rays of the moon. Seeing him, they all became submerged in an ocean of joy and forgot everything else. After a moment, they regained their external awareness. Observing that Uddhava's appearance was exactly like Sri Krishna's, they worshipped him. They thought now their cherished desire was fulfilled. So then, Uddhava said that Under the influence of Krishna's Yogamaya potency, these queens have forgotten themselves and are suffering anxiety caused by separation from Krishna. Unless Krishna becomes visible to them, none of them will regain their proper consciousness. But Krishna has wound up his pastimes and is no longer externally manifest in this world. That time is finished. Now we have entered a different age. However, listen, and I will tell you another way. He can be visible through Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he quotes some verses. Wherever, whenever devotees of Bhagavan recite and listen to Bhagavatam, certainly Sri Krishna is present. Wherever a single verse or half a verse is heard, the Lord Krishna shines forth along with the gopis. Those who have taken a human birth in the land of Bharat but have not heard Bhagavatam are slaves of sin and commit spiritual suicide. The fathers, mothers, wives, and whole family lines of those who regularly serve the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam are all easily delivered from material existence. Haribo. So if you have any family members you're worried about, or family lines, they will get deliverance if you serve Bhagavatam. Women and others obtain what? Brahmanas develop wisdom, kings conquer their enemies, Vaishyas gain wealth, and Shudras become prosperous. Women and others obtain everything they desire. Thus, what fortunate person would fail to regularly serve Bhagavatam? As the perfection of many lifetimes, one may obtain Bhagavatam. In it, the revelation of devotion to the Supreme Lord is born. So then, Uddhava will speak Bhagavatam to the gopis for 1 month. And Vajranabh is there, and he's also listening. He put his son in charge, and he came to listen to Uddhava speaking Bhagavatam with the queens. So Uddhava conducted relishing of Bhagavatam for 1 month in Vrindavan forest near Govardhan. As this relishing went on, the pastimes of Hari revealed themselves all around in their transcendental form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Krishna also revealed himself. Everyone then saw themselves situated within him, and Vajra saw himself at the right side of Krishna's lotus feet. As Vajra became free from the bereavement of separation from Krishna, he and his mothers appeared splendid in that holy land, which exhibits for Krishna the night time of his Rasleela. They saw themselves as rays of the moon's effulgence and were astonished. Cured of the disease of separation from their beloved, they returned to their eternal abode. They and all the others there who belonged to Krishna's eternal pastime suddenly disappeared from the sight of ordinary people. In the groves around Govardhan, among the cows in Vrindavan and other forests, they enjoy eternally with Krishna. Those who are fully dedicated to loving Krishna can see them. Anyone who hears or chants about how these devotees attain the personality of Godhead will also attain him and be relieved of all distress. So Uddhava spoke Bhagavatam after leaving. On his way to Bhadrikashram, he spoke Bhagavatam here in Govardhan. And there's that place, Uddhava Kund, where he spoke Bhagavatam. So, any questions or comments on today's verses? Abhay. Yeah, first he enlivened the gopis, and then he's asking Krishna basic Bhagavad Gita knowledge. As we mentioned in the opening, it was like he's getting a taste of his own medicine now, what he told the gopis. You know, Krishna's everywhere. Why are you feeling separation? So now he's getting the same medicine, and Krishna's going to leave him. And so he's getting a taste how they were feeling while he was telling them this jnana knowledge. He's getting the same. Yeah. Right. They may make offenses. Yeah. Right, don't instruct the faithless in the holy name also, yeah. That's another reason, yeah. It's another reason.
I couldn't understand it anyway.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. How could they misuse it? Because they won't. But the thing is, that's the point. They'll take the knowledge and give their misunderstanding of it, or misinterpret. I mean, so many people are doing with the Bhagavad Gita.
Are you?
Right. Yeah, so yeah, that's a problem. There's an example of how they could misuse it, and maybe you shouldn't tell the prisoners about it. You have to have a talk with Chandrasekhar. make sure they understand Bhagavad Gita before you let them out. Or give your own commentary on that verse 36 of chapter 1, six aggressors. Six types of aggressors. Any other questions or comments? Why is it called Uddhava Gita? Because if you call it Bhagavad Gita, then how will you know the difference? And that's one reason. And then, of course, to glorify Uddhava. The other one's glorifying Krishna. And now Uddhava is being glorified. That's two reasons. Any other reasons why it's called Uddhava Gita instead of Bhagavad Gita? I mean, my first answer is, of course, in how you know the difference.
It's less open to Uddhava.
Well, that we know, yeah, obviously. To glorify Uddhava, Uddhava Gita. Who gave the name of it anyway? It must be Vyasadeva, or, yeah? What's that? There's a painting?
He's repeating that in Bhadrikasham.
Yeah.
Uddhava is.
Oh, there you go. Oh, he's repeating it in Bhadrikasham. That's a good reason, because he's repeating it. He's speaking it.
Yeah.
He's the messenger of Krishna to speak this Gita, so it's Uddhava Gita. Good thinking. I didn't understand what you said. Why do Narayan Rishi need this knowledge? They're already liberated. Because all the swans, they never tire of hearing the nectar of Krishna consciousness. Rasa, there's a verse right in the first canto, Rasa Vrajam Rasapyasya. Vayam tu navichipya mau tumashoka vikrame. We never tire of hearing your ambrosial glories. Even up after liberation, they want to hear. And so this is another meaning of that verse in the first canto. I think it's 19th, first canto, first chapter, 19th verse. That even after liberation, they never get tired of hearing the glories. So up to liberation and after liberation. Yes. Oh, that's for the third verse, actually. Yeah, that's another point, is that Uddhava looks just like Krishna. So if they hear this Gita from him, they'll immediately think of Krishna just by looking at Uddhava. They'll think of him, and then he'll be speaking the same words that Krishna's speaking, so it'll be really amazing experience. That he's sending Uddhava there because they want to see Krishna, but Krishna didn't go there. So he's sending him because he looks just like Krishna. Everything the same, almost. So he's a representative, even in body.
Yeah.
Bhanu Swami.
Actually, he told that.
When spoken by different devotees, it becomes sweeter, increases the taste. For Shukadev. Yeah, it's more sweet when Uddhava speaks. And Shukadev, that's the third verse also. Even up, that's Bhuvi Bhavuka, even after liberation, they want to hear. I was taking two verses together. Verse 3 says the devotees, even after, up to liberation and after liberation, they're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah? Yeah, Krishna says if you know this, you have the highest knowledge. What is the difference? Well, Uddhava Gita is an explanation, it's more elaborate than Bhagavad Gita. It's the same thing, but it's an explanation. Like here in chapter 6, he explains Ashtanga Yoga, but here you get all the mystic powers, how to get them, and and also that it's a waste of time. That's one example. So we have the Sankhya Yoga in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, but here we get chapter after chapter of Sankhya Yoga. So many chapters of Sankhya. Creation and counting the elements and so many. I mean, not just one little chapter and you are not this body. It's so many. Yeah, right. He puts in examples like Avanti Brahman. That's good. And the 24 gurus, they are there. 24 gurus, Avanti Brahman, Ayla, Gita, Pururava. There's so many personal examples. So you think it might be higher because Uddhava is supposed to take sannyasa and Arjuna is supposed to fight. So therefore you think sannyasa is better than fighting? I think you better go back to Bhagavad Gita. Class is at 5 o'clock.
9:34.
Yes, that was Arjuna's idea. Yes. Did he speak Uddhava Gita in Dwaraka or Pravas? Adi Purush, do you have... Oh, you don't know. Well, according to Satyaraj, it was under a Banerjee. Prabhas. Well, I don't know. The picture is in Dwaraka. When you see the picture of Uddhava...
What pictures are
there? He spoke it to Maitreya and Prabhas.
No, he didn't speak it to Maitreya.
What was he speaking to Maitreya?
A different... Yeah.
No, the picture is...
Yeah, the picture isn't... It's, no, he's not under Banerjee at all here.
There's another picture.
There's another one. As far as I understood, it was in Dwaraka. Yeah, because he's in Dwaraka and he's telling him, you know, he's... So it's before the departure of Krishna. It's not... Prabhas is when after they went. And you'll see it's chapter 30. He's saying we should all go to Prabhas.
Actually, I saw one purpose
in Prabhas.
Explaining. And then he heard 2 times.
2 times
Uddhava. Actually,
he's falling behind.
And after.
My understanding was it's in Dwaraka because it's before the disappearance of Krishna, before he leaves.
The point is that he heard that.
Yeah. And then after he went to Bharikasha. Yeah. And then. No, then he followed Krishna from behind. Remember third canto?
Yeah.
He went back to Prabhas.
Yeah.
He went back. So
text
it's...
Text 46, it's something is in the report.
Okay, yeah. Let's read text 46.
Which chapter?
As far as I understand, it's in... Spoken in... According to Bhagavatam, Uddhava was en route to Bharikasham. So he leaves, he goes... See, it's in Dwaraka. Then he goes to Bharikasham. He heard about the Lord's journey to Prabhas, turning back and following Lord Krishna from behind. That was my understanding. He saw the Lord alone. So he spoke this in Dwaraka before, yeah.
So then before they go to Prabhas.
Before they go to Prabhas, that was my understanding.
And
that's in Prabhas. Yeah, when he followed from behind.
And third canto, didn't mention Yamuna?
He met Uddhava. Vidura. He met Vidura at the Jamuna. Yeah. And that was after he went to Prabhas. First he went to Prabhas. Then he went to Vrindavan. There's a place here in Vrindavan where they say that Vidura and Krishna spoke. My understanding is this is spoken in Dwaraka and then, Uddhava leaves and goes on his trip, and then Krishna goes to Prabhas with all the Yadus.
Does he go all the way to Vrindavan then?
No. Then he just goes some way, then he hears, oh, Krishna's gone to Prabhas. Then he turns back and he goes to Prabhas. And he follows.
He saw Krishna sitting in the bank of Saraswati.
Saraswati, that's Prabhas. No?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Saraswati. So that is. Which chapter is that?
3, 4, 6.
Yeah, in the third, third canto. Then he went back and then he again heard the Chatushloki, or he heard Bhagavatam. It said there he heard Bhagavatam, as far as I remember, not Uddhava Gita. He heard Bhagavatam at Prabhas. In the fourth chapter it describes that he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence, more than... Anyway, he heard... something very confidential. And then in the purport it says Uddhava is the personification of Bhagavatam. So he heard Bhagavatam. He wanted to hear again Bhagavatam. So then Krishna spoke Bhagavatam to him. Of course, this is also, Uddhava Gita is also Bhagavatam. So it could be. My understanding was it was Chatushloki, but something more confidential. Not back. He went to Bharikasha. Yeah. Well, as far as I understand, no. He went to Vrindavan. He was in Vrindavan with Vidura, and then he was still in Vrindavan. So then he must have spoken to the gone to Govardhan, and that time spoken to the queens. He came to Vrindavan. That's when he met.
After
Vidura. No, before. On his way.
On his way.
He came, he met Vidura. He was on his way to Bhadrikashram, and he met the queens, and he spoke Bhagavatam, and then he went to Bhadrikashram. So he's a traveling preacher. He preached on the way. He spoke on the way. The original traveling preacher, Uddhava. And then Lord Chaitanya, he had many. Nityananda and Haridas and so many traveling preachers. No, the queens. The queens. Dwarka queens. Yeah, that was way before. That was before Krishna's disappearance. Krishna just left. It was just after he left Vrindavan, then he spoke to the gopis. Krishna sent a messenger very quickly. Krishna went to Gurukul, and then he came back to Mathura, and then he sent Uddhava immediately to Vrindavan.
When did the queens go to Vrindavan?
After Krishna left.
After Krishna
left? Yeah. Oh, from, he was, yeah, from Prabhas to here, Vrindavan. Krishna Katamrita, Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, Skanda Purana, from Skanda Purana, Vaishnava Kanda, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.